Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, and happy President's Day. We've got a little President's music there to get things going. President of the United States of America. You guys remember that band?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, all yeah. right. Yeah,
1996, you know, Peaches and Lump. Yeah, they were the rage for like 6 months.
Exactly. And then did they have another song after Peaches?
Other than Lump, I guess that's about it.
Well, it was good enough to get on this podcast anyway, even if they, I don't know why they called themselves that. But anyway, it gives us a segue to talk about things. Brian Biegun and Josh Pugh from Grassroots Midwest, thanks for coming in today, guys, to talk about some politics.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
All right, so sitting on our table are the MERS maps we published with Target Insight several years ago that show all the district boundaries. And we're taking a look at how things have changed just since these maps were drawn in 2011. And Brian, I know you were involved in doing some of that. And let's start off here as we're taking a look at how things are going to shape up for 2018, because it's never too early to talk about that. Let's start big, and then we're going to get small. We're going to start with U.S. House of Representatives. One of the things I thought was very intriguing, guys, was how the U.S. Congressional Democrats have now switched focus from that first congressional district that Bart Stupak only held, 10 years ago or so, and now they're looking at the 11th congressional district with David Trott. Some thoughts on that, Brian?
Well, if you just look at the way things have been going just over the last several years, everything north of Clare, which used to be where your competitiveness was, is becoming more and more Republican. It's just the folks in that area tend to identify more with the Republican Party. But what you're also seeing is that in suburban areas like Oakland County, with influx of Southeast Asian immigrants and others, it has started to trend more Democrat, where a lot of these seats are becoming more competitive. Because just looking at the 11th district, obviously Canton, Livonia, Plymouth, Northville, Troy, the parts of Rochester and Novi have seen a lot of influx of newer people coming in. So that is kind of what is making it more of a potential grab for Democrats, should they get the right candidate who has enough money to be able to put up a credible challenge.
One of the really devastating and interesting things about 2016, the day after, was looking at the numbers. The candidate who actually came closest to losing a seat, the Republican, was David Trott.
That was the
competitive seat that hardly any money or effort was put into. It was really, really something. And Democrats, myself included, are starting really to feel like Charlie Brown on the football here with some of these congressional seats. It's just really, really something year after year.
Think about Lon Johnson as well, you know, Lon Johnson, how much money did he pour in that seat? Yeah. And he just got annihilated. And that isn't any reflection necessarily on Lon. That's just how the seat was going.
Well, especially after the primary, when the top pick for Democrats as a Republican made it through that primary. I mean, Jack Bergman was the candidate who every Democrat wanted to come through that primary. And it just didn't make a difference. I mean, I think every Democrat in the state thought that Lon's campaign had won the carpetbagger argument, that they had a more compelling case on that. And it just, on election day, didn't make a difference.
Why is that, guys? Why is it that we see such an influence on the top of the ticket? Because when we were looking at polling 2 months beforehand, it looked like folks were distinguishing between races, but then on election day, they really didn't.
I guess that's just an odd question. Maybe because with the statewide sampling, it's the way it's sampled, because they take maybe a larger count of areas like Wayne and Southeast Michigan that might skew the results. And as you get up there, a lot of people just don't want to participate in polls. So there's really not a good answer about polling anymore. It's just that obviously how we communicate with each other has changed drastically, because I don't know how many people here have a landline in their home so.
Well, I do it just because I want to do the morning interviews on the radio, and it just sounds better than doing cell phone.
Don't want to have that conversation with the radio guy. No, I don't have a landline. I think there's also something to the fact that people like to maybe sound a little bit more enlightened to a pollster. So where someone is gonna tell a pollster, oh, no, I make my decision based on, you know, the issues. I'm an independent voter. When they get into that voting booth, it's really a little different, and they're gonna mark that straight Republican ticket and get out of there.
Interesting. I never thought about that. So looking ahead to 2018, Is there a real chance for Democrats to pick up some seats? And if so, where would you go if you were a Democrat? I'll start with you, Josh.
Southeast Michigan. Any chamber, state house, state senate, Congress, that's where the action's going to be. Like Brian was saying, there's been an influx in both some immigrant communities in some of those key areas. But also, I mean, as the more wealthy and well-educated people who have historically shifted to the Republicans are now coming over into the Democratic camp, the flip side of that is the older and whiter populations north of Clare are going hard into the Republican column. The reaction to that on the Dem side is some of those more well-off white people and more immigrant communities in those key areas in Southeast Michigan are really going to make those seats more competitive, if not safe for Democrats very soon.
So, Brian, let's take a look at the state Senate then. If what Josh says is true, that means that maybe districts that we never really thought of as being competitive in the past all of a sudden are competitive. The 7th, the 12th, for example?
Yeah. Like the 7th particularly would be high on my list if I were a Democrat just because of the way that things are trending. And also the population in Canton keeps growing because there's – each year they're seeing more of a more influx in the number of voters participating that generally would favor Democrats. A lot of these other Oakland County seats, at least on paper, look, you know, marginally Republican. But yeah, that's kind of like the new battleground area. So again, if they could find candidates, and I don't think there's really a bench established yet, they could make a play for like your 12th district or even stretch and go try and make something in 15, but that 15's not so much. But
what about Marty and Marty Nolenberg in the 13th?
When the seat's open, I think Marty is in a good enough position as is, but his seat in the future would definitely be in play. So, and this is the last time it's going to be before redistricting. So we'll see how everything sort of shapes up then.
Democrats in the Senate, though, are in an interesting spot just because they're at a historical low mark. Senate Democrats need to start with that Muskegon seat, the Upper Peninsula seats, Kent County, the Hildebrand seats, Saginaw County, and Kalamazoo, the O'Brien seat. That's Democrats have to start there and then expand the map from there into some of those Southeast Michigan seats that have historically been safe but might be swinging back over as the Trump effect does its worst.
And I agree with that in part. Like, obviously, the Hildebrand seat would be high on my list. And same thing with Kalamazoo, because it tends to have the sort of population that's trending more Democrat, because a lot of people who like to be in more active areas, too, tend to concentrate there, and most of them tend to vote liberal. And you can see that, too, where Josh likes to live in the heart of Old Town. I like to live in Sleepy DeWitt. So, you know, just as an example. But, like, the 29th and the 20th, they're definitely – strong targets. The UP, I think the Democrats are losing it too fast, so I don't see that. But yeah, Southeast Michigan and maybe a few other sort of densely populated areas. Muskegon would be a good option, again, if they had a candidate there. So, and Holly Hughes is such a strong candidate now, so.
Well, and maybe we'll have the Holly Hughes-Colleen Lamonte battle all over again up in that 34th. Or we've got a former state representative over in that district out of Muskegon, Marsha Hovey Wright. I mean, that's a possibility, yes? No?
I think Democrats would kill for Terry Sabo in that seat.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't know that that Rep. Sabo is interested in maybe leaving a safe seat 4 years too early.
And Marsha Hovey Wright is not really battle tested. She ran in like a safe seat, and you just kind of go along. And I don't think you understand the rigors of how hard a competitive race is. And Holly has run like 5 or 6 times now. So I think she's in a very good. She'd be a very good strong candidate there.
Well, what about John Bumstead coming out of Owego? Does the map not really work for him here because he's coming from the rural area as opposed to the population base?
Yeah, that's true to an extent, because about 2/3 of the vote is in Muskegon County, and I think a lot of people in that area are just familiar with Holly, too. So, and the fact that she has the ability to self-finance also makes a big difference when you're going to a more media strategy versus sort of a boots-on-the-ground approach.
I want to go back to the Upper Peninsula here, because the Democrat we keep hearing up here in the 38th District, Scott DeAnda, he's so conservative, he might be a Republican. I mean, does he actually make this a potential here, Brian? I want to ask you on this because you seemed a little down on this. Scott DeAnda said he would vote to eliminate the income tax, and that actually may play up here.
Yes. Dan has put himself in a good position on being a moderate on a lot of issues, whether it be guns or economics. But I guess we have to see how culturally conservative these folks up there are, because when we get into matters of the life issue and other social issues, Dan is more of a typical liberal in that regard. He does a good job presenting himself fairly close to the middle. So he has that.
All right. I wanted to ask you guys also, while we've got the state Senate map up, about your reactions to Ruth Johnson getting out there early. I talked with Joe Graves earlier this week. He basically said that could just clear the field for Republicans. Yeah. Brian, do you agree with that?
Yeah, because how can you compete against like an outgoing Secretary of State when people have, you know, been seeing your name on like signs for like the last 8 years? And I think just her name alone and her bill and whatever sort of money she still has in her coffers, I think puts her in a very strong position. You know, I think if Gail Haynes were to get in, I think she might be the only one to compete financially. But the name ID is not even close to where Ruth is at.
We're hearing a lot of rumors that Mike Green could be up for an appointment in the Trump administration doing something in Michigan with rural development. Josh, if that's the case, we know that we have some interest here from Kevin Daley. He's going to run for that seat coming out of Lapeer. What do you think the chances are that the Dems could pick this thing up? You know, you take a look at the numbers. On paper, it's a 51% Republican seat, but it always seems like it goes a little, you know, a little further to the right.
Yeah, I think two things are happening there. One is that Bay County is definitely Trump country. We saw that in 2016, and it remains to be seen what the effect of two whole years of a Trump presidency, if we get that, will be. But Brian alluded to this earlier. There's a candidate problem for Democrats. There's really not much of a bench in some of these key areas. There are not. For Republicans, they have, in many areas, three or four House members or former House members who can take a run at this. And they're just, other than Brian Elder out of Bay County or Charlie Brunner, neither of whom I would posit would be interested in something like that at this time, there's not a lot.
Let's switch the map here. Let's get the House of Representatives up here right now. Early on, guys, and obviously we just got done with an election here, but just from an early look at it, the Democrats are the ones who are going to be losing some of their seats in this. Does this put them at a disadvantage, Brian?
Not really, because of the open seats that we know are going to be up, there's only two, the 110th with Scott DeAnda and the 25th with Henry Yanez, I think are Republicans' best chance to expand their majority, because you can look at Winnie Brink's seat or Tom Cochran, and it looks good on paper, but beneath the surface, it's not going to happen because that Grand Rapids seat is just declining of Republicans so fast. I just don't see it. And when you get into Cochran's seat, that 25-30% in Lansing, plus the shift in the Holt area is becoming more lean Dem. I don't see that as an option. But then the Republicans that we know are going to have probably four or five seats, you know, because Holly Hughes is up this time around. You have like a couple Oakland County seats in Horlack, McCready, Kesto. Of your open seats that I think Dems have a good shot at winning, plus all the vulnerables are that won this time around and people who may potentially be running for Senate. So the House Democrats have a chance at maybe like 12 to 15 versus the Republicans probably at most can really play in three.
Interesting here, because you would think then after we went through this last swing, we were told that this was going to be the best chance for the Democrats to take majority. But who knows? Who knows, Josh, because of what the Trump factor, it's almost like a new unknown every day. Democrats can't feel all too bad about their prospects.
I would be cautious. I am cautiously optimistic as a Democrat heading into 2018. I think that they are at this point they're making the right moves. And like Brian said, the flip side of some of those Northern Michigan seats trending to the Republicans is some of those historically more competitive seats down here, like the Grand Rapids seat, like the Cochran seat, Western Washtenaw County, are just frankly off the board for Republicans.
What about the 109th up there in Marquette? Is that something that all of a sudden you have to be worried about?
I wouldn't say so, at least not for a few cycles. What we saw across the state, without exception, is the areas of the state that trended more Democratic and were more resilient in the face of the Trump effect were seats that were close to a major metropolitan area or a major university, okay. Which is obviously true in Marquette County and with Northern Michigan University there. We will see in the post-John Kivala world what that looks like for Democrats. But the names that we've heard, Tony Ratajski, who was Union's choice in 2012, if he jumps in, he would be really formidable. And that would pretty much salt that away for Dems for another 6 years.
I saw you taking a look at your cheat sheet there, Brian. Yeah. I know you got something good on this.
Oh, yeah. I was just kind of watching how it's trended up. It's not as trending as Republican as fast as the 110th and 108th did, but still there. So going back to what Josh said, you know, it's worth looking at in maybe like 4 to 6 years and see where they're at. Just because of the general trend, but with Marquette being almost the entirety of the vote and the strong, you know, union presence in the city, it could be a while before they catch up with the rest of the UP.
On the flip side here, I was taking a look at the map, and in one House district that was on nobody's radar last go around, but I'm going to presume is going to be high on everybody's radar this time around, is the 40th district, that McCready seat, Brian.
I agree. Because, again, it's a place where it's over the last 12 years, it's probably dropped in base about 6%. Again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier about the influx of newer people moving into the area and people not necessarily completely aligning with Republicans. So, like, on issues like the different state boards, about 52% went for the Republicans, still kind of a narrow vote for what the base alleges. So the possibility is definitely there because it is an area that is trending faster and faster Democrat. So assuming that they get the right candidate, the Democrats that is, they have a very strong shot at playing there because, and this is where they can catch Republicans off guard, because sometimes you get just so used to the way things are that you don't really think about it until it's too late.
I would agree with that. Democrats have a lot to be excited about in the outlying areas of Wayne and Oakland County. Even going so far as to posit Laura Cox's 19th, if she vacates that for one reason or another, I would be thinking very hard about that if I'm a Democrat. The 20th, where Hillary Clinton actually won, and Colleen Pober just didn't ran far enough behind Hillary Clinton that she didn't flip that. But especially with the incumbent there being a Pat Kolbeck acolyte, that is not really going to play very well in 2 years, I wouldn't think, especially not in a Clinton district. But I would also be looking at Clint Kesto's 39th. That's going to be coming open. And yeah, even as far as the 40th, which you mentioned, Kyle, and even the 41st, Troy and Klaus in there, Marty Haverlach's seat, he's going to be outgoing, and that's going to be open as well. So I think Democrats have a lot to be excited about in those outlying areas of Wayne and Oakland that have historically been very strong Republican and are swinging back the other way really quickly.
All right, guys, I'm going to take back the congressional map here. This is the last thing we're going to talk about here is we're going to lose a seat in 2021. I think we've all agreed that if Republicans retain the majority as they have, Brian, I'm going to ask you, what congressional district do you see getting swallowed up?
The ninth. That's just the easy one because Sandra Levin's looking at retiring and you're going to come out of a Dem seat. But I don't know if it'll necessarily impact the map in the most positive way. And I guess that's something you have to look at because, okay, you're going to have to merge some of the 9th in with the 14th and 10th. So maybe or Debbie Dingell's picking up the rest of Wayne County. And now you're moving up along this sort of eastern edge of Oakland. So it can cause like a mess altogether because it could theoretically put Trott and Bishop in the same seat. Again, where you're losing seats, you create a certain amount of chaos. Plus, when you get into like the Voting Rights Act and you have to take like the two African-American districts in consideration, it could have, you know, major effects too on just this entire area so that a Trott-Bishop matchup is very plausible at that point.
Now, the easiest thing to do would be to make Detroit its own congressional district. But, Brian, we know you mentioned the Voting Rights Act. That creates a whole new problem because that opens up that map to a lawsuit. Yeah. If somebody wanted to challenge it and say, hey, you're getting rid of one of our majority-minority districts here, and that ain't going to fly.
Yeah, because the only other way you can do that is, okay, you start like at maybe like Dearborn, Redford, and you start working your way up to Southfield, maybe cut around 75 to Pontiac, take 75 up again to like Flint, then to Saginaw.
Then you get into some really ridiculous issues like we saw in North Carolina.
Right, exactly.
The I-75 district. Do we really want that?
So you're really in a tough spot here for Republicans because, yeah, the easy way here would be to just create Detroit its own district with a couple other little outliers. You'd be good to go. But Yeah, for the Voting Rights Act, not really the most plausible thing you can do.
Well, yeah, to get the number up to 55%. And again, where people live has changed because a lot of the middle class of Detroit has moved outside of the city too, because the city is not getting larger just yet. So you're seeing a lot of folks who could afford to live elsewhere choosing to do so. So there's not this dense concentration anymore, which, again, will make the map a little bit more crazy in the area. So whether or not you get something as concise as what you have now is really up for debate.
Now, if you're a Democrat, and let's say for some reason you guys get control of the pen, Josh, do you still go after the ninth as far as something swallowed up, or is there something else you can do?
Oh, boy, you're asking me to dream big now. I think no matter what you get rid of, obviously Republicans would love to have no other option than to make an attempt at making sure that seat that we lose is a Democratic seat. But no matter what you do, as Brian was just describing, the difficult machinations that will be facing whoever holds the pen after we lose that congressional seat, no matter what you do, the map just gets thinner for Republicans. There's just no way around that.
So that means Mike Bishop or a David Trott, their seats become a little more marginal, a little more competitive than they would be otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. All absolutely. Right. Or maybe even, I mean, if the 12th gains a little bit more of the 7th, maybe Tim Walberg, something happens around the margins there between Washtenaw and Monroe County, maybe Tim Walberg's not sleeping too easily either.
Interesting.
Also, if the Democrats were in charge, I could definitely see a major change to the 3rd District, where you're taking on more of Kent County and somehow you were reaching into Eaton and Ingham, possibly, Ingham or so, just because then you're starting to make a more lean Democratic district, because Kent County itself, like the city of Grand Rapids, heavily Dem, Kentwood is also sort of trending that way. So there's a lot of, believe it or not, I wouldn't have said this 12 years ago, but there's potential for a little bit more swing areas in Kent County because of the population shifts.
Well, and don't forget, Republicans would, if they're going to lose one, I'm sure they wouldn't mind it being Justin Amash.
Well, that's something that we'll be keeping our eyes on for the next few years anyway. It's always great to talk about it. Great to talk about maps and politics and House and Senate and everything else. Nobody knows it like you guys at Grassroots Midwest.
Thank you.
Appreciate Brian Biegun, Josh Pugh for coming in. All right, as we're closing, we're going to bring back President of the United States of America. All right, and we're going to play that song that you mentioned earlier that I'd forgotten. All right, so your favorite President of the United States, Brian.
Well, this is a generic answer because I'm a Republican, but I'm going to go with Ronald Reagan.
Okay. All right. It's not going to be Donald Trump.
No. Maybe in like 3 weeks, but I want to maybe... because remember, we don't know how long this presidency is going to last. So enjoy it while you can.
All right, Josh, your favorite president.
You know, I hate to be stereotypical. I really wanted to go with a Johnson or a Kennedy, but I can't not say Barack Obama. It's really personal for me. Okay. That was the first campaign I ever worked on. And so that's where I'm at right now. We'll see where I'm at in 3 weeks.
All right, so here's an interesting fun fact. When I was in middle school and high school, my mom and dad used to drag me to these antique shows, where I got bored out of my mind if they didn't have comic books or baseball cards I could go through. And so what I ended up doing is I started collecting stuff from the presidency of William McKinley in 1901. So I've got campaign buttons, I got books. My mom just gave me this Tupperware thing the other day. It has all this William McKinley stuff in it that I picked up at these antique shows.
Who would have thought that decades later, adult Kyle would think that was the coolest thing ever?
I don't know what to do with it. My wife was like, what are you going to do with that, Kyle? I guess it's going in the basement, isn't it?
You know, looking around, a little disappointed. I don't see more William McKinley posters up.
Or any. Let's go.
Yeah, well, maybe I should bring it. Maybe I should bring it here.
Or if you're a landlord, or if you own the building, you should rename it the McKinley Building.
Oh, jeez. Now, that would be something else. I'll have to take that up with the boss. I don't know what he'll think about that. All right, well, very good. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.